Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It is Wednesday. By the way, today is National Kindness Day. So as you get behind the wheel and you pull out onto whatever busy road it is, and someone pulls in front of you and you want to flip them the bird or yell at them or shake your fist or cuss under your breath, just remember it's National Kindness Day. It's okay.
You lost me already on National Kindness Day, Andy.
Oh, darn it. Steve Dunham is here with me today from the Washington County School District. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Andy.
Appreciate you being here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's so weird, the transformation from seemingly very kind people, normal people, and they get behind the wheel, and I don't know if it's a combination of the anonymity of driving, of the fact that the person who's being an idiot may cost you your life someday, or, you know, they're trying to protect whatever passengers you might have, but a lot of us turn into kind of not very nice people when we're driving.
You know, for me, I'm not nice. It's that I'm helping others recognize their own stupidity.
That's not very nice, Steve.
If you're going to turn out in front of somebody, use the skinny pedal. Step on the gas and go. Don't turn out slow and then put your blinker on to change lane. Don't do those things. Or wait till there's a clear.
That's stupid to do that. You're right. I have been in three accidents in my life. All three of them were the result of someone else's stupidity. And one of them in particular in Salt Lake, a guy pulled out and then slammed on his brakes. Pulled out in front of me, and then the traffic was stopped, so he pulled out really fast. He wanted to get in front of me, and then he slammed on his brakes. And yeah. Anyway, yeah.
It happens.
It happens. But hopefully we can all practice a little kindness. I was reading, okay, so... Have you heard them talking about the courtesy trap on St. George Police lately? Basically, so you're in a traffic and you let someone out. Yeah. And someone in the other lane hits them because you were being nice to them, letting them in.
Yep.
But I saw yesterday somebody had a picture from the driver's license, the guide for drivers in the state of Utah. And it said, one of the keys to driving in, you know, driving a motor vehicle. And the correct answer was courtesy or niceness. Mm. And I'm like, wait a minute. I just had the police tell me not to be so dang nice. And now the driver's license guide says to be courteous. I'm confused. Maybe, I don't know.
I know. It's a trick sometimes. And to challenge others.
Speaking of not being that nice, there was some heated discussion in the school board meeting the other night about boundaries.
Boundaries are always a challenge. Yeah. It's like you're separating families, and it's tough. It is tough, and we understand that.
So is it the boundary we're talking about is Crimson Cliffs to Pineview Desert Hills area, but is it because people want their kid to go to a certain school and therefore they're mad that you're telling them they shouldn't? Or where's the anger coming from?
I think it's really the frustration of, they did have this at one time, and because of enrollment numbers, we have to make adjustments. So we look at boundaries every year in the school district, Andy. And most of the time, we're making minor adjustments between elementary schools. And even in elementary, sometimes it gets frustrating, sometimes it's not too big of a deal, or sometimes we can work with developers to say, oh, there's going to be a tremendous amount of growth here. We can hurry and put that area that isn't quite built out yet into an elementary school, and so there's no families affected because there's no real homes there yet. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it works like that. Now, other times, when you get up in the secondary levels of schools, you have to look bigger. And when you're looking bigger, you're going to affect more. And so this is the challenge we had. Crimson Cliffs is at maximum capacity. It's what we consider. The board has voted it as a closed school. That means the state law allows us to be open enrolled. You can choose whatever school you want to take your child to, and then you can take them to that school. If it's closed, that isn't the case. Okay. It's no longer an open enrolled school. So Crimson is closed.
Two full.
Okay.
And is there a number? What is that number? 1,500 or somewhere in that area?
Well, 1,500 is our capacity, but we're really at over, I think we're at high 13s, 13.8, I want to say.
Okay.
I'm not sure the exact numbers. I've looked at them enough over the last few weeks, but I don't remember Crimson's. I'm sorry.
No worries. We get the ballpark area.
But we have space at Pineview. We have space at some of our other schools. And so those are still open. So with this boundary, we're looking at how can we get more growth into the Pine View area. And so we can take a few kids away and provide for some growth. So we made an adjustment, I think a couple of years ago on Pine View to give them a little window of area, but then we felt like we needed to make a bigger piece. And this is what happened here.
Now, I'm going to not mince words here. A lot of people look at it and go, well, Crimson is the night school. It's a new one. It's fancier. It probably has better teachers and better this and better that and more equipment, and Pine View's the ghetto school. That would be public perception, Steve. Now, will you address that? If someone comes in, moves into the area, says, well, I don't want my kids going to Pine View. That's a ghetto school. I want my kids going to the nicer school, Crimson, or even Desert Hills.
Well, that's like saying, oh, my wife is too old. I want a newer wife. Isn't it?
Well, I'm not going to say that.
I'm not going to say that either, but everybody wants the shiny penny.
Sure.
But they don't realize that our same teachers that teach in one school teach in another school in the district. All of our schools have really amazing teachers. Hmm. Pine View has schools that are teachers that care about the children just as much as Crimson's teachers care about their sure. students there. And so to say that, because it isn't a shiny new school, it's still a very solid school. It's been updated many times. We just put, I want to say, more than $3 million into updating the commons and classrooms and a lot of things. So that's a school that, while it might be older, it still has a very strong bones. So, and it's a solid school.
Reality is that teacher-wise, administration-wise, et cetera, there is no difference.
There is no difference. In fact, I would stack Mr. Meese against any of our principals. We have great principals everywhere.
I like Mike. He's a good guy.
I like Mike, too. And he cares about his students. He believes in his students. And that's how it is with all of our administrators, all of our teachers. They care about the kids they work with. And so just because you're looking on the outside, I'm sorry, but that's kind of shallow.
Yeah.
It really is.
People are shallow.
People are shallow. They want the shiny penny, and that's where they want to, or they want to be with what they might think are the rich kids. Right? Yeah, but there's a lot more school spirit in other schools.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm not saying Crimson doesn't have. I'm saying that you'll find the school spirit everywhere.
Sure. Sure. All right. So the concept basically then behind the boundary shifting, for the most part, is to make sure we have approximately the same number of kids in each home site.
Because if we get too high in enrollment at one school or too low in another, we also risk our classification with the UHSAA. That creates a huge headache. Say, if Crimson gets too high and they go from a 4A to a 5A school, then we have one school that's a 5A that has to travel for every single games, or whatever their sports team is, every single game they play, they're traveling. That's a nightmare.
And that includes things like debate and drama and
everything.
Band and football, basketball, baseball, soccer, volleyball, et cetera.
Every single thing. And likewise, if a school gets too low, then they get bumped down and suddenly, well, they could be the dominant school in 3A and they're wiping everybody else off the board because they're barely qualified because of enrollment to be a 3A, but their talent is above that.
I wanted to ask, kind of related to all this, so in Iron County School District, their high schools are 9 through 12.
Uh-huh.
In Washington County School District, their high schools are 10 through 12.
Correct.
What went into that decision?
That was a decision by the board, and they really like the four-school system. Okay. Four schools meaning elementary, K through 5,
right.
Intermediate, 6 and 7, middle, 8 and 9, and then high school 10 through 12. And the reason they like it, because studies show, and these are studies from universities, major universities, show that students learn better when they're with peers closer to their age. The more you separate those ages, the more there is a disparity in test scores, in learning and growth. And so by keeping them closer, you have higher scores as a result. Better learning. And so our board has decided that it's worth that in our community. It's something we've always had, whether it was the sixth grade center way back when or now intermediate schools. And so by keeping those together, the other argument that we've heard often is, oh, I prefer my ninth grade daughter not to be with 12th grade senior boys.
Yeah.
And we've heard that too. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's something we've heard from parents. And so our parents have supported the board in that.
when I was a sixth grader in Texas, mm-hmm. The school I went to, Howell Intermediate was what it was called, mm-hmm. was 678.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first day of sixth grade getting on the bus, and there were all these big, gigantic, in my mind, studly eighth graders, and they were not very nice. They were picking on the little kids and stuff, and me being one of the little kids, and I was scared to death. I was scared of them. I was scared of intermediate school. I was scared of being with kids that were 14 when I was 11 or 12, yeah. You know, and that was tough. I know it's anecdotal, but that to me backs up exactly what you're saying.
And the reality is that intermediate and middle school are already tough transition ages. Yeah, those are tough ages for children, for students. And so as we look at that, if you can minimize the age gap, it's going to make the transition marginally better. I'm not saying that works perfectly, but it does work better generally.
So the bottom line on the boundary change, the hearing you just had, and there's another one coming up, we'll talk about that in a second,
yes.
is Pineview's going to get a few more students and Crimson's going to get a few less.
Ideally,
right?
Yes. Ideally, yeah. And we're providing for growth. We're taking in some developments that are growing, okay. and are still being built. And so that will provide a growth component to high school or to Pineview's enrollment. And that will be really good.
All right. Text from somebody said, I hear it's not necessarily about the teachers or how nice the school is. It's been said it's how each school is graded and how the school scores on testing 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, et cetera. So they prefer their kids to go to a higher scoring school. Is that true?
Some parents do that. The component that the state grading does not take into account is socioeconomics. And so when you have a school with a lower socioeconomic, they are going to have lower scores without a doubt. So wealthier schools will have higher scores. That is a fact. Those parents can afford tutoring. They can afford to be at home helping their children with homework. They can afford to do a lot of these things. So if you have parent involvement, that is the key on a higher graded school. You have more parents that are involved, so Crimson's are going to be higher. Desert Hills are going to be higher. Pineview's are slightly lower. But that comes because you have a lot of families where you have both parents working or maybe working multiple jobs to make ends meet. We are not a cheap community to live in.
By example, when my kids, we went to a, well, poorer school, a lower socioeconomic school, as Steve says, and my daughters both scored, they were some of the highest scores in that school's history. They were leading the way. If you took those exact same scores and put them in a different school with maybe a little better socioeconomic status, they would have still been high, but they would not have been record-breaking and highest in the school.
Exactly, so, yeah. Exactly. And so that I want people to understand that a grade from the state on a school does not come back to the school being a lousy school. They have the same great teachers. They have a great administrator. They have school spirit and people that care about them. The challenge they have are mostly at home. And parents forget what an important role that is in a student's life. Every time I come on and you ask me, what's the number one thing you can do with kids? Read with them.
Read.
Ask about their day. Spend some time with them. And I preach that because it is really important in an educational setting that they have that component at home as well as at school.
My wife's incredible at that. And in fact, I'm proud to report, Steve, along those lines, our grandkids, the ones that are old enough to love story time, live in up in northern Utah. They now call almost every night, and they say Story Gigi.
That's
what they
awesome.
Call her, Grandma Gigi, Grandma Griffin Gigi. Story Gigi, Story Gigi. So she'll read them a story over FaceTime.
That is so fun.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Good for her.
We'll carry
What's her favorite storybook?
Oh man, I don't know. I
what's your favorite?
What's my favorite? You know, I had one that nobody has heard of. It was about the three giants and a kid with measles, and I used to do the giants' voices for my kids and stuff. I love that one. I actually really like Green Eggs and Ham, but it is so repetitive that after reading it, now if those that are not familiar with that book, it basically Theodore Geisel, Dr. Seuss himself, was challenged to write a book with only a certain number of words. And so in this book, they repeat over and over and over again, but adding on to it a little each time, the idea of I do not like green eggs and ham. And so by the time you've read the book, I do not like green eggs and ham like 50 times.
That's right. That's
and then
right.
If you read that every single night, or sometimes one of my sons would go, again, Dad, again.
Yeah.
No, not again.
But that's what makes it fun. When you read yeah. in a different voice, when you engage yeah. in that area. Mine was But Not the Hippopotamus.
Uh-huh.
Love that book. Mm-hmm. And I used to have fun with it with my kids, and they used to love to have me read it to them. So.
There's a book, I don't know the exact name, when you give a mouse a muffin.
Give the mouse a muffin. Yeah. And it turned to give a moose a muffin yeah, and give a... Yeah. Yeah, 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 there's
kids
a series
love,
of those.
I love those.
When you give a vampire a muffin.
The Hungry Caterpillar was a big one,
yes.
too, as well.
And okay, I've distracted us from where
yes,
we were going.
Yes, we are but, off track.
But please, I wish parents would realize there is much more to a school than a report card from the legislature, which deliberately does not count a lot of factors that play into test results and everything else that really makes a school. You know, there is so much that makes a school.
There's one other book, As Long As I'm Living, My Baby Will Be. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes.
The mom that...
I Love You
yeah,
Forever.
I Love You Forever. I Love You For Always. As Long As I'm Living, My Baby Will Be. Or,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, good time. Anyway, okay, so boundaries. Pineview will get a little bigger. Crimson will theoretically get a little smaller. Now, you said there's another border hearing,
boundary hearing.
This coming week involving Dixie High School.
That's correct. On Monday night, we are expanding their boundary south into the Desert Color area off of Exit 2.
Okay.
We feel like...
Which is currently Crimson boundary?
No, it's currently Desert Hills boundary.
Desert Hills, okay.
And so Desert Hills is getting up there. And if we leave all of that growth that is in Desert Color,
it is growing.
It will definitely throw Desert Hills over the top. And Dixie currently is landlocked. And so we don't have a lot of growth. But by putting this finger down and coming into that growth area, we're providing an opportunity for students that can go into Dixie, provide some growth area for them. And for us as a school district, all we need to do is provide a bus.
Okay.
Or eventually maybe a couple of buses. It does affect, I think it's about 100 students right now. But
so that would skip over Bloomington Hills, which is Desert Hills.
But that will be part of it because Bloomington, I believe, I have to look at the boundary and read it. In fact, I'll look it up and I'll come back. Yeah.
Yeah, look it up, baby. Google it. Well, not Google, but yeah.
Oh, I know right where it is on the website. I just need to pull up the letter, but it's going to take me a second. So,
well, if we talk about boundaries, and you know, obviously you're affecting people's lives, and I think you know, I was talking with my wife about boundaries of church. They call them wards. If you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints,
yes.
You know what I'm talking about. And the current ward that I'm in has, you know, every Sunday we get 500 people to church. And, you know, we fill up the gymnasium and everybody's like, well, why don't you split it? But the church, unlike the school district, the church is it seems like to me, less likely to move boundaries around. And they have to worry about, like you do, they have to worry about schools.
Exactly.
And buildings and things like that.
And that's what I wish people would also recognize is when you move into a growth area, if you move into an area that has a lot of construction happening, there's going to be adjustments. We have to make adjustments because we have to balance enrollments to make the schools efficient to run. And so that does become a challenge for us. It really does.
Question from a text. Why would Desert Color bounce over Bloomington and Bloomington Hills, which is closer to Dixie than Desert Hills?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking up here because I need to read it. Why we need because I think Bloomington is already split because some of Bloomington can already go to Tahnaquint, which feeds into Dixie Middle and Dixie High. So Bloomington's already a kind of a split school. We have several elementary schools. We try not to do that, but it's right. A challenge. And so some of Bloomington is already split. I'm looking for the letter, and I'm not finding the letter.
Do you now? We have Career Tech High School down there, you know, off of Exit 2. Do you anticipate any time in the near future, or not so near future, I guess, a high school being built besides Career Tech down there off Exit 2?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not off of Exit 2, but we do on the south end of the county there. We're already looking at land for potential growth. And a secondary cone site is expensive.
Yeah.
And so we do try to plan that out years in advance so we can get the land, see how growth trends are going. We did that out in the Snow Canyon Ivins area. And we had a 70 acres out there. Mm-hmm. And then the growth shifted to the Little Valley area originally, changed, and then Washington Fields. And so we eventually sold off that piece of land. We didn't buy it as an investment opportunity. We bought it simply because we were having growth in the Snow Canyon and Ivins area.
You thought you might need it.
We thought we might need it. And then Ivins turned out to be a lot of second homes or vacation rentals. And so we didn't realize the growth of students coming in. And we're like, okay, we feel comfortable. We can part with this land now. And now it is becoming a development, but we're still okay on growth over there.
And it was it wasn't intended to be an investment property, but you guys probably made money on it, right? I mean, so that's an added bonus.
We'll make a little bit, but we do not purchase land with the intent of making it as an investment. We get it with the intent of, hey, we're going to need a school in this area. So we have some property up in the Dixie Springs area.
I was going to say, what's next? Dixie Springs seems like a likely candidate.
In Dixie Springs, I believe we're also working on some property in other areas. We don't like to talk about all of the areas where we're looking, because then developers or landowners go, oh, the school district, they have money. We'll raise the price. And we do try to work with, as much as possible, the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, because they turn the land over to us free of charge with an agreement that any land we don't use gets turned back to them or to the another government agency with their approval. An example of that is Snow Canyon High was built on BLM land at the time.
Okay.
And we got that land for free. We had a little 2-acre section that we didn't need. And St. George, I believe it was St. George City, wanted to put a park there. And so we had to get approval from the BLM to turn that over to St. George City so they could put in a park.
And they did.
Yeah, and they did.
And they did. I've been here since 94. So 30 years. There was no Snow Canyon High School. It was being built when I moved here. Obviously, no Desert Hills, no Crimson Cliffs. No career tech. So things have changed. The only two high schools in the area were Dixie and Pineview. And, things have changed quite a bit. It's funny, the attitudes, everybody, when Snow Canyon was built, there a lot of people, hey, it's shiny and new. Let's go to Snow Canyon. Well, Snow Canyon's old now. And people, Desert Hills, and then Crimson Cliffs.
We see that every time a school opens.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to come to the new school.
Yeah.
And in some ways it's helpful because, the more you can open a school with, the more you can, the more efficient it is to run the school. But then it becomes a burden too, very quickly, because in a few years, you're suddenly at capacity and you need the people that live in that area to be going to that school, and the people that live in their areas to be going to their neighborhood school.
Very, very fascinating stuff. If you can go to school where your boundaries are, I know there are still people with this era of open enrollment. There are people that say, in ninth grade, well, my kid's going to go to this school or my kid's going to go to that school. But you're saying right now, Crimson, you cannot do that.
Right now,
it's closed.
Yes, Washington Fields Intermediate, Crimson Middle, and Crimson High are all closed schools. In fact, we just posted the legend of all the closed schools as well. Let me see if I can. I can't find anything today. I can't find the letter on the Dixie change. I'm trying to.
Well, let's do this. Let's do a weather and commercial break.
Perfect.
And you will find stuff in the interim, right?
I will hunt.
Nice. He will hunt. We'll take the break. It's the Andy Griffin Show. Steve Dunham, Washington County School District, with me today. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Talking with Steve Dunham from the Washington County School District today, we're talking boundaries. They had a pretty emotional meeting on Monday night about boundaries of Crimson Cliffs and Pineview and Desert Hills and Now we've got another one coming up this coming Monday involving Dixie's boundaries. The idea, Steve has explained to us, is we want to make sure that none of these schools get too big. They all stay approximately the same size. And that was a decision made years ago. We don't want big old 4,000 student,
no,
you know, 6A Bingham High type schools in southern Utah.
You get to a point where you're warehousing children, and yeah, we don't want to get to that point. We like to provide opportunities equally across the board, and we felt like this is a sweet spot for our schools where we can do that, you know.
What did you find in your research during the commercial break?
So I found a list of all the schools that are currently closed and open, and that includes elementaries, that includes the middle schools, that includes everything. And so I can tell you that Washington Fields Intermediate, Crimson Cliffs Middle, Desert Hills Middle, Crimson Cliffs High, Dixie High, Hurricane High, and Snow Canyon High are currently designated as closed.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, not closed as in the building is closed. Closed as in they're not accepting more students.
They're not accepting boundary waivers.
Right.
And so that's what that means. Those that are open are Pineview High, Desert Hills High, Snow Canyon Middle, Pineview Middle, Hurricane Middle, Dixie Middle. Those are all open. Tahnaquin, Sunrise Ridge, all open. And so those are the schools that are open on the secondary. On the elementary side, we have South Mesa, Majestic Fields, Hurricane, Horizon, Desert Canyon, and Bloomington elementaries are all closed. And so that means their enrollment is very high.
And what Steve is kind of alluding to is the fact that in open enrollment, you can get a boundary waiver.
Correct.
And you can go to a different school than the area where you live.
And that's in state law. That's school choice.
Yeah. And you're, that's mandated from the state of Utah. That has applied. I, you know, having been a sports guy all these years, that has certainly been a factor when it comes to sports.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a kid move into the area who's a great athlete, and the family says, well, I want that athlete to go to this school.
Mm-hmm.
And if the school is closed, they can't do that, right?
That's correct. They have other means they can do, and many people still work the system. I'm not going to imply that.
No, they do, yeah.
Yeah. And UHSAA gives some very specific rules, which is in cases of severe bullying. And so, you know, we'll see these incidences of these guys that were the head football players, you know, the toughest guys in the school, suddenly saying they were bullied tremendously to go to another school. And you're like, really? Really?
Yeah. The other thing
is,
I have heard of, mom and dad split up, quote unquote, and mom bought a house in the boundary of this other school. When in fact they're not actually divorced or split up, it was just a ploy to try to get your kid into that particular program.
And that does happen frequently down here, yeah. And we will verify addresses as much as we possibly can, but there is no enforcement means when we can show that, hey, a different family lives here, but you say you live here, and they've brought all the correct documentation they need to bring. We can't enforce that. We're not the law. And so people lie to us.
Somebody just texted and said, when you say it is closed, does that mean if we are building a new home in the boundary, or I'm assuming it means just if you're outside of the area wanting to cross the boundary?
Yeah, just if you're outside. If you're building a new home, we have to accept every child that lives within that designated boundary.
Right.
So that school can be closed and still growing because of growth within its own boundary. And so, yes, we will still accept your children. If you live within that school's boundaries, we will accept it.
And by the way, I want to congratulate Crimson Cliffs High School's football team going to the state semifinals on Friday night. They play up at Rice Eccles Stadium. I thought it would be interesting, Steve, if you can address this. This is off of boundary stuff. We're just talking about now the football team. When a school plays in a high level state championship type situation, like they're in the semifinals now,
uh-huh.
What is the cost for something like that? And what does the school district allow? Say if my kid is not on the football team, but he wants to go see the game. It's at 6 o'clock in Salt Lake. He's going to have to leave school early to get there. Is that allowed?
It depends. That's okay. The best answer I can give.
It depends. All
right. It depends. It depends upon the school, what the principal is making accommodations for. Most schools will make accommodations where people can watch. Now, to get up there, it becomes more of a trick of trying to get a bus to take everybody up, because right. we're already stretched super thin on transportation. And so to get an additional bus just to take students up, that becomes a big challenge.
So you're saying it's probably not happening this time?
It could happen. I'm not saying it won't. Oftentimes parents or boosters will step in and charter a bus or whatever they want to do.
But that is not a school bus. That's a different bus.
That can be a different bus. Yeah. And so... sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. I can't give you a definitive. That's where I say it depends. Some schools can do that. Sometimes we have more buses available than others. And with playoffs, we do try and reserve the buses for the teams if mm-hmm. we have another sport going on and we need the buses. If they're not available, they're not available. Or if the drivers aren't available, they're not available.
Yeah. Can't get blood from a turnip, so to speak.
Yeah, and the drivers have to abide by the law of how many hours they can drive.
That's a big drive up.
And then they need so much time off before they can drive back, which then it comes into, is it an overnight stay? Is it this? Is it, you know?
Yeah.
It becomes quite a challenge, a logistical challenge.
What about financially? You know, we always talk about money spent per student and, you know, success versus money spent, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have wild card things like football playoff games in Salt Lake, and how does that money, how much does it cost, number one, and how is that money absorbed in the budget?
I can't answer that question. Okay. I don't know that I've ever been asked that, Andy, so right. I apologize.
Well, now you have.
But I am going to, I'm taking a note to look it up then.
Okay, very good.
And then I can get the other follow-up notes for people as well here.
I remember in years, and it's not a factor this year, but in years past, we'd have, say, a semifinal or a championship game between two Southern Utah schools, and we would be like, well, look, let's have the championship game in Southern Utah. It'll save a bunch of money, and it'll save people having to worry about driving through the snow and those mountain passes and stuff. And now this year, there aren't two Southern Utah schools in the semifinals or the champion won't be in the championship, so it won't be a factor. But that was one of those that we were like, it only makes sense. How can you dismiss logic? UHSA would always say, well, we've already rented the building. We've already scheduled this. Sorry.
And sometimes that is the reason. Yeah. You know, they have not been able to get a venue down here, you know, whether it's Dixie State or SUU, not Dixie State, Utah Tech. My apologies.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And so, you know, if you can't get the facility, but it seems like we had one just in the last couple of years where we did have a playoff game
down
here.
They did move one, yeah. They did move one down.
And we proved to the UHSAA that it could be very profitable for them because that...
People showed
up. It was packed.
Yeah.
It was packed. And we said, if you'll do that, we'll fill it. And we filled it.
Yeah. By the way, there I have seen some really good playoff games at like Southern Utah University or over here at what was Dixie State and between two teams that, you know, that made it here. The... 1A, the 8-man, the 1A, the 2A, and 3A, by the way, this weekend are at Southern Utah University. I was talking with Jeff Clough from the UHSAA. He said it costs about $30,000 to rent the arena, the
stadium
for one day. $30,000, and it's like, well, don't even think about that, right? You think about renting, say, you know, you might rent a hotel room, you might rent this, that, or the other thing. $30,000 to rent a stadium for a single, and that's a small stadium like SUU. I can't even imagine what it costs to rent Rice-Eccles.
Oh, exactly. So they rent that for that day, and they pack the games in, you know.
Yeah, they do. And that rental includes, they pay it, they have employees that, you know, that work for the U or work for SUU who are there ushering and taking tickets and things like that. So that includes, you know, they're paying those employees and everything. So,
yeah.
Big bucks. Beyond your and I pay grade, that's for sure.
I think you're right. Much beyond.
So I could use $30,000, but they can't rent me out. So, all right, quick commercial break. More with Steve Dunham, school district. We're going to talk a little bit about, we were talking about school size. What about classroom size? How many kids should be in a room? What's the teacher to student ratio, et cetera, et cetera? We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 948 on KDXU. Steve Dunham from the Washington County School District is with me today. And Steve, I wanted to, we have 10 minutes to talk about the classroom size.
Sure.
What are the mandates? When you say, okay, we're fully staffed, we have all the teachers that we are allowed to have, we're fully staffed. So what does that mean then as far as classroom size? What does the state think and the district think should be the number of students in a classroom for one teacher?
Well, the state allows the district to decide what is best for them. Because,
so it's not up to the state.
No. You know, it really comes down to costs. Every teacher costs whatever it is, their salary, their benefits, and whatever.
Right.
And so the board establishes what a classroom size will be, an optimal classroom size. So we fund teachers. It's different for elementary than it is for secondary. I think kindergarten through third or kindergarten through fourth, it's 22. Okay. Every 22 students will fund another teacher. Now, the flip side is, well, my child's class had 30 kids. Well, yes, because second graders don't come packaged in 22 kids per class. It doesn't come that way, and so it doesn't always work out perfectly. So you have this funding mechanism that says every 22 kids will fund a teacher. And at 22, you're funding a teacher, but at maybe 33, you're funding a helper in the classroom.
Okay.
And so that's why some classes are bigger, some are smaller, but there'll be a helper in the classroom for some and then for others. Now, secondary, it's much higher. I think it's about 28 for secondary. It might be 29 or 30, but I'm not positive. I'd have to look up that number as well. But that's the board determines classroom size. On average, if you look at the whole district and say, we would like to drop classroom sizes by one student, you know, and that funding mechanism, that is about $1 million to $1.5 million per child you lower that. So if we went from 22 Wow. to 21 students in elementary, that would cost the district and its taxpayers about $1 million to $1.5 million to create the funding mechanism to pay for it, because you're paying an extra teacher so you can lower those class sizes. And likewise in secondary. That's also why we have some classes that can take more than that. So on average, your classes will balance out. You look at PE or gym. They can take easily more than 22 or 28 or 30 or 40 or, you know, some PE classes have upwards of 60 kids in them because they can do that. And you have a gymnasium, you have the teams, you have multiple teams playing basketball at once. And so, and that helps lower the class sizes in the classroom because you're balancing it out. You have 60 children coming into this class and then your other classes can be adjusted lower.
With that number, when the board decided on this number, were there some studies cited? This is the number that is ideal. Obviously, I mean, 1-to-1 or 1-to-5 would be great, but, you know, that would be incredibly expensive. So is there a study or how did they just pick that number? What went behind that?
If you go by studies, I think it's around 18.
Okay.
But to get to 18 from 22, boy.
A lot of money.
Yeah, that's upwards of $6 million. For us to do that. And so you have to balance with what does the study say, what can we afford as a school district, and so you have to be realistic with both those things. It's like, I would love to drive a Ferrari, however, I can only afford a Ford.
I don't want a Ferrari, but they're too low to the ground for me.
That's fair.
I want something tall like my truck.
You want something taller, a little bit bigger?
Yeah. So,
but that's kind of how class sizes are adjusted. And again, when parents say, oh, but my child's math class has this. Math, language arts, because it's a core curriculum, that will have slightly higher class sizes. And
because everyone has to take that.
So you build your schedule around your core classes, and then it works out from there.
Okay.
And so when parents come in and say, I definitely want art, I don't want this, and we're like, art's full. That's because the teacher is full, because we're putting people wherever we can, and there isn't always room but there might be room in band, or there might be room in, you know, here or there.
Right. And when you get to college, you can be a little more selective. And with that kind of thing. But, okay, how has career tech affected these numbers, the student-to-teacher ratio? Does it draw then some of the – that was one of the goals, right, to draw some of the students away from some of the other bigger schools.
Yes.
And help mitigate that.
So it doesn't affect student-to-teacher ratio. Because it that's doesn't. Set by the board, that's pretty much consistently the same.
Okay.
It will lower the overall enrollment at a high school. because you're pulling children away. And so if you're lowering the overall enrollment, your class may go from 33 down to 32 or 31.
Right.
So it might affect it slightly, but overall it makes an impact on whether that school's open or closed, things like that.
Do you know off the top of your head the majority, what the students at Career Tech, what school they come from the most? What ratio are we getting? A lot from Desert Hills?
I actually Simpson? Just heard that. Yeah, I think the majority are from Desert Hills right now because it's close, and Career Tech is right in the edge of Desert Hills boundaries, out by the White Dome and the, what's the development across from the airport? I think that's not Desert Color.
Desert Canyon.
Desert Canyon, yes. And so because they're already so close, children are coming from there, which is in the Desert Hills boundary, to Career Tech.
Okay. But we are getting, there's still a lot of students from, say, Pineview, Dixie.
Oh, yeah.
Crimson, et cetera.
I believe the enrollment at Career Tech is right around 600 to 650 children this year. And they're expecting to be up over 700 next year. Our capacity at that school is 800. So
we had the principal, Chris Homer, on the show maybe 2 months ago. And he said they even tried to have students coming from Enterprise for a while, but logistically that just, it wasn't working.
Yeah, that's true.
He is from Hurricane. He said, yeah, we have some kids come from Hurricane. But again, logistically, because it's a lot further, that means they have to get up earlier.
Yes.
And, you know, and it makes it more difficult. Not to say Hurricane students aren't welcome there. There are Hurricane students there. It's just a little bit harder.
It is harder. There's a lot of kids that drive themselves. But as a district, we've committed that if they can get to their boundary high school, so for Hurricane, the kids need to get to Hurricane High, and we'll provide a bus that leaves Hurricane High early in the morning and drives down to Career Tech, because they start earlier. So there is a commitment to wake up earlier, to do the earlier things. And then our school, because of that, Career Tech gets out earlier so the bus can load up and get back to school, and they'll arrive approximately when their high school would normally get out.
They could even maybe ride a bus home from there then, if they were, you know, in
yes,
bus boundaries.
So that's the goal.
Bus from Career Tech to, say, Hurricane, and then the bus from Hurricane to home if they need be.
Correct. So,
very fascinating. All right. That school size, is that consistent, or class size rather, classroom size, consistent with the rest of the state for the most part?
No. Different districts will do it differently based upon how much money they have available.
Okay.
And so, like, I came from Jordan School District. I think it was slightly higher, one or two kids higher in what they would do. And their elementaries are bigger up there as well. Our elementaries optimally are around 550, 650 children. Up there, we were year round at the time, and it was 800. And so they were much bigger elementary schools. Some schools had multiple portable classrooms, like upwards of 13. And so, yeah, it's a trick based upon how many children you have, how much money you have available.
And I did read recently that, is it Alpine? One of the school districts agreed to split into three different districts. Is that what it said?
Yes. And it wasn't so much agreed as voted.
Voted, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of agreed, yeah. Well,
kind of forced agreement.
But that's going to be really expensive, right?
It's going to be super expensive. I was at Jordan School District when it split and formed Canyons, and the taxpayers do not realize how expensive it was. At the time, this is 2009, I was able to document more than $50 million it cost the taxpayers. But that was all I could document. There were additional costs that came later with tax increases, bonds, everything. It is so expensive to do something like that.
So even though someone might say, well, Washington County School District's getting kind of big, it's pretty smart to just leave it as is.
It is so expensive to do.
Yeah.
And I hope taxpayers would recognize that we have a school district that is very efficient, that it has great test results. We are looked at from the rest of the state on how is Washington County doing this stuff, and they will look to us as a guide. And so to try and split us, you would damage a well-functioning district, one of the best, if not the best in the state, and your tax bill would go up tremendously.
All right. We only have about a minute left. I'm going to quiz Steve on when they build a new high school.
Yeah.
Well, where will the next one be?
Yeah, you're asking me to look in a crystal ball and say, where are the kids going to move to?
I am, yes.
I can't answer
Come
that.
Come on, magic. Can't you read the future?
No, it's going to be a new high school will obviously be 5 to 10 years out, if not even more. It could be more. because things have leveled out in Washington County and in the state in enrollments. We're actually down about 200 children this year. I think it's about 160 children, which is the first time in more than 10, I want to say in decades, that our enrollment has dropped. We haven't increased. But that's on par with the state and with nationally. Enrollments are dropping.
And internationally, where birth rates are going down.
There you go.
Down.
But I'm not going to predict a school. We have land and we're looking at land.
Okay, my guess is our Dixie Springs area, maybe a Sand Hollow High School. That sounds interesting.
Maybe.
Or maybe down Desert Color area.
That's a good guess. We could call it the Sand Hollow Swimmer's Itch. That could be their mascot.
Oh, we can do better than that. Oh,
okay.
The Pollywogs. The Fighting Pollywogs. Steve, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Andy.
It's 9:59 at KDXU. We've got news coming up and then Buck and Clay and Buck after this.